It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, new legislation would boost CPR education in Wisconsin schools. We'll hear from the American Heart Association.
First, it's our weekly look at the latest in national politics with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. The markets have been in decline since the start of the year, and we'll take a look at what this could mean for the presidential race.
And Bernie Sanders has been closing in on Hillary Clinton as we approach the Iowa caucuses, and a big endorsement from Sarah Palin for Donald Trump. Does any of this change what's going to happen in Iowa?
Harry Enten joins us now. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's start by talking about the economy. Now, the Dow dropped 500 points today. It's been on the decline since the beginning of the year. Now, of course, a big part of conventional wisdom is that people vote based on how their personal budgets are doing, sort of a bigger picture of how the economy is doing. So what kind of effect is this, do you think, having right now in the presidential race, in the political landscape?
Right. And I think we should be clear that, you know, many people don't have a lot of money in the stock market, if any money at all. So obviously no one wants to see the stock market falling, but we tend to look at other factors to understand how the economy will affect the presidential race, such as jobs, such as income, such as how people are feeling about the economy itself, and a number of polls ask that. And the job market is actually doing better than it once was. Obviously, it's not doing as well as I think some people want, but we're gaining many jobs, many more than we were gaining, say, 4 to 8 years ago. If we look at economic confidence, it's been rising, but not nearly as fast as perhaps it would in a truly great recovery. Basically, when you look at the economic picture as a whole, you do see that there is some gains being made, which would suggest good news for the Democrats, but not enough of a gain that, say, if Hillary Clinton became the Democrat nominee, that she would be any sort of a shoe. And it's basically 50-50 each way.
So at what point does the average person who maybe does not have money in the stock market, at what point do they get a little nervous?
I think they get nervous if they notice, you know, that they're getting fired. I think they notice if the unemployment rate is going up, if they notice that the jobs being gained are going down, if they notice that they're maybe not getting as much of a raise as they did last year. Those are the types of things that most voters are going to be paying attention to. And right now, there isn't a lot to suggest that the declining stock market is changing voters' perception on the economy as a whole. But, of course, it may take some time. And I think one of the key things that we should point out is that studies from past elections point out it's really the economy, how the economy is doing closest to the election, how it's doing a year before doesn't make that much of an impact. It's really in the final few months, final 6 months, how the economy is doing. That's what we really will need to pay attention to.
Yeah, I mean, there's that old expression, it's the economy, stupid, but is there a point at which the economy is just kind of a meh and everything else trumps that? For example, national security, things like that?
Sure. I mean, you know, if you're in a situation where I think we are right now, if you sort of look at all the economic indicators where the economy isn't doing so well that it's going to be the thing that saved the Democrats, doing so poorly that it's the thing that would doom Hillary Clinton if she were to win, there are other things that we would look at. And so, you know, where the parties stand on national security, where the parties stand on foreign policy, where the parties even would stand on stuff like the environment. All of these things obviously make an impact on the election. It's just they're usually muted because the economy is such an important part of the election. But if the economy keeps going as it is right now, which is good but not great, then those other things could be much more important factors this time around.
Well, right now we've got these falling oil prices. We've got the slowdown of the Chinese economy. Not a lot that you can lay exactly at the doorstep of the White House, for example. So how are politicians talking about the economy right now?
Yeah, you know, one of the funny things is that voters aren't as that smart to necessarily figure out, you know, who is to blame for the economy and who isn't to blame for the economy. You know, it could be, hey, you got in the White House at the wrong time. It was really the last president's tax cuts or tax hikes that made the difference for this given president. But then that president really is just, for lack of a better term, screwed by the conditions that were left by his or her predecessor. But what we're essentially seeing is that the Republicans are saying, look, the economy's bad. We're going to make America great again, to quote Donald Trump, while, you know, Hillary Clinton's saying, look, the economy is doing better. There are still parts of the economy we'd obviously like to fix. And Bernie Sanders has certainly picked that up in terms of income inequality. So no one's on either side claiming that the economy is doing fantastically. But on the Democratic side, it's a little more bright than it is on the Republican side.
We're talking national politics right now with senior political writer and analyst for 538, Harry Enten. And Harry, let's get into the horse racing aspect of the political race right now, the presidential race. And 538 recently announced predictions for the primaries. Looking at Iowa, what are you seeing there?
Well, we're seeing two separate pictures. On the Republican side at this point, and I should clarify, we have two different forecasts that are going on. One that looks at only the state polls, and then we have a polls plus forecast that looks at other factors that in the past have usually, though not always, helped to improve the accuracy of the forecast. And on the Democratic side, what we see are both the polls forecast and the polls plus the additional sauce both favor Hillary Clinton, although only by a small margin, with Bernie Sanders gaining, although that gain perhaps has not been as much in the last week as it was 2 weeks ago. And then on the Republican side, what we see is a real split. If you look at only the polls, you see pretty much a dead heat between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. If you add the little extra sauce, then you see Ted Cruz with a little over a 50% chance of winning, while Trump is more towards 30% versus, if you just look at the polls, they're both right around 40%. So on both sides, we have a race that we can't really be sure who's going to win. But on the Democratic side, Clinton's a slight bit more of a favorite than, say, Ted Cruz or Donald Trump would be on the Republican side.
Looking at this through the lens of history, does that surprise you for where we are right now?
I think it does, at least on the Republican side, a little bit more than the Democratic side. Look, Iowa and New Hampshire are states that oftentimes, especially Iowa, doesn't necessarily predict who's going to win. But usually the candidate who ends up winning is in the top two, and if not the top two, then the top three or four. And if you're looking at the Republican side right now, historically, neither someone like a Donald Trump nor a Ted Cruz would look like candidates that Republicans usually nominate. But it's very difficult to dismiss the fact that it's not just in Iowa where Cruz and Trump are doing well. It's in New Hampshire. It's in South Carolina. But in the past, also, we know if you go back to the Democrats in 2004, there can be a lot of change in the final 2 weeks of the campaign. So just because Trump and Cruz are at the top right now, don't be shocked if there's some third person who comes out of nowhere to win. Not saying that's going to happen, but it is possible looking at history.
And would you be starting to sniff that third person out in the polls by now?
Yeah, we would probably get a pretty good idea of the polls that are coming out this week and then obviously especially in the next. There haven't been as many polls conducted in Iowa, at least not released to the public, over the last week, so it makes it a little more difficult to sniff that out. But we should start to see that. You know, it won't be one giant movement at once, but instead of, say, polling at, you know, 20, if they're going to end up at 25% and they were initially polling at 10%, you wouldn't expect them to be at 25 this week, but you might see them increase to 15, and then that doubles to 20 next week, and then to 25 when the votes are actually cast and counted.
Well, hopscotching over to New Hampshire for just a moment, there was a poll that I saw you tweeting about that had Bernie Sanders looking like he was consolidating a pretty big lead over Hillary Clinton there. You thought that was an outlier, but do you want to talk about that a little bit, what that could mean?
Yeah, you know, New Hampshire has been the state that I think most people looking at this, if Bernie Sanders was going to win a state outside of Vermont, that they expect him to win, it would be New Hampshire. New Hampshire is obviously right next door to Vermont. A lot of undeclared independents vote in that primary, and they are favoring Bernie Sanders heavily. The particular poll that I was referencing and that you just referenced was a poll from the University of New Hampshire that had Sanders up by an amazing 27 percentage points. Our own forecast has the lead at about a third of that, around 10 points. I think it might be closer to 12, our exact forecast. But it's clear that Sanders is winning there. Now, whether or not if he ends up winning there, we don't know. If Clinton were to win in Iowa, that affects what happens in New Hampshire. And then you go down to a state like South Carolina, which is heavily African-American on the Democratic side, and Hillary Clinton does very well among African-American Democrats. So we can't say if whether Sanders wins New Hampshire, it's a game changer. But obviously, Clinton would prefer Sanders not to win New Hampshire, but he clearly has, at least according to our forecast, a better than 50% chance of doing so at this time.
Now, you were in Iowa last week. What did you see on the ground there that maybe confirmed or called into question what you're seeing in your numbers so far?
You know, one of the things that really struck, I think, everyone here at the staff was how much better organized, at least on the ground, the Democrats were. They had a lot more field offices, a lot more people working in those field offices than the Republicans were. The Republican campaigns, we visited a few offices where there really were, you know, not very many people. There was one office we visited where there were only three people in the office at the time. So, you know, and I should also note that we couldn't get into some of those offices. Donald Trump's people wouldn't even allow us to take a look inside. But we did get a picture outside of the office in which we all look great. But, you know, the thing that really struck was that the whole idea of a ground game in Iowa on the Republican side is probably overrated. None of them really have a great ground game. Maybe Ted Cruz has the best of any of them, but none of them really have a good ground game on the Republican side.
So another news from yesterday from the campaign trail, Sarah Palin came out, endorsed Donald Trump, which surprised you not at all, Harry. How come?
Well, Sarah Palin is always in the business of entertaining people, I guess, so I don't think it was so surprising that she endorsed the most entertaining political character to come along in the American political scene and for forever. But in reality, why it really didn't surprise me was three things. One, Sarah Palin has taken on a very anti-establishment tone. I don't think there's anyone who's more anti-establishment than Donald Trump. Two, there's this idea that's floating out there that Sarah Palin is this great sort of conservative leader. But in fact, Sarah Palin's record hasn't been all that conservative when it comes to stuff like immigration or feminism, a whole host of issues. So Donald Trump perhaps not having this great conservative record really didn't keep her from endorsing him, because she's really been always more about being anti-establishment. And the third, both Palin and Trump are loved by the people that like them and hated by the people that don't. They're very divisive. And so Palin getting behind someone who is as divisive as she is, simply put, is just not all that surprising.
And Trump saying, yes, there would be a place for Sarah Palin on my cabinet if I'm elected president, does that mean a VP shot is out of the question?
I would be very surprised if there was a VP slot for Sarah Palin for Donald Trump. But, you know, I have to be honest with you. I think a lot of us have made fools of ourselves saying that Donald Trump can't do this, Donald Trump can't do that. So the idea that I would dismiss him picking anybody as vice president at this point would simply be foolish.
And lastly, the Supreme Court announced that it's going to take up the challenge to President Obama's action on immigration. Give us a sense of what's riding on that case.
Well, you know, let me talk about the politics for a second. You know, there are a lot of Republicans who have argued that President Obama has used his pen without going to Congress to whether you know, on executive decisions, executive actions, whatever, has overstepped his authority. And they have argued that to the base over and over again, and they've certainly tried to argue it to the general electorate. And the Supreme Court so far really has not been so friendly to Republicans. You know, they upheld the Affordable Health Care Act. They were, you know, they've done so twice. And a lot of Republican voters are very upset with the Supreme Court. So this action right here going into an election year, especially when it comes to immigration, and remember, there are a lot of Latinos in the state of Florida, it could make a difference in terms of how voters perceive the parties. And Republicans obviously wish for Obama to be told, you've overstepped your bounds. But the Supreme Court so far, even though it's probably a 5-4 edge in favor of the Republicans, Anthony Kennedy and John Roberts haven't actually acted as the way I think most Republicans would like them to act. So we'll have to see what happens.
Harry, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That was Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time with the latest in national politics.